Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's with my co-host, Sandy Williams. And you know, Sandy, U.S. to send Ukraine additional $275 million in military aid. Now, there is conversation, Sandy, that if the Republicans win the House, they are going to cut off or cut back on the aid to Ukraine. Is it possible that, I mean, when we've made a commitment to do something like this, Sandy, as a nation, should politics get involved in it like this? I mean, it's a big deal that we've invested this money and right in the middle and continue to invest this money. But is that a Democrat or Republican thing? What is that?
Well, you know, I for one happen to think that we ought to take more, have more public involvement in our foreign affairs. We didn't decide to become involved in Ukraine. We didn't decide to sign that that strategic agreement in November 10th. You know, that was all done sort of in the dark. And so, you know, this is one of those circumstances where, in some respects, I guess I agree with the Republican inclination to debate it. My concern is the only reason they're doing it is because they say white when the Democrats say black and vice versa. But, you know, we didn't sign any contract in this regard. We had a presidential proclamations that were essentially and then the Congress that was enacting aid on a sort of an ad hoc basis. But I think we've got to call a halt to public, to international affairs simply being done by fiat. And I think we do have to get involved with actually analyzing it and evaluating it. So here I am probably agreeing with the conservative wing of the Republican Party that this ought to be looked at and reexamined, because I think we made a mistake in November of 2021 that maybe helped initiate this whole problem. And then here we are arming Ukraine to the point where we're going to help them fight to the last Ukrainian, maybe. Now, you know, we can look at it in the short run and say, well, gosh, they've had these military victories. But now Russia sort of ramped it up. Russia was clearly fighting this war on a more moderated basis. They weren't attacking infrastructure. They weren't doing a bunch of things they are now. And so, yeah, my personal view is that this ought to be debated. It ought to be reconsidered. And I'm for it.
You know, Sandy, I was reading this article, and this is kind of why all this, we can't just act like this stuff is not going on. And it says, Putin should be overthrown, the majority of Americans say in this poll that was taken. But Sandy, so if I'm Putin and there's a majority of American voters believes seeking to remove Russian President Vladimir Putin from power is a reasonable objective, according to a new survey conducted exclusively for Newsweek. And so you think that Putin doesn't know that this poll and what has come out of it, that he doesn't know that there are people in this country who say he needs to be moved? Who should determine whether or not a leader should be removed other than his people, right?
No, exactly. You know, that's the problem with, you know, we have to walk a fine line. Letting a popular political process in America dictate our foreign policy can lead to some pretty screwy concepts. You know, we decide to that there's some leader of another country that we vilify, and we decide it's our job to unseat him. I mean, we did that with Saddam Hussein. How did that turn out?
We had our hands in on it with Muammar Gaddafi in Libya.
Sure. And, you know, it's not turned out well wherever we've done it, because it's one thing to have a leader that possibly isn't the kind of leader we would hope for our people or their people. It's another to take out a leader and create a vacuum, and then what fills the vacuum?
So, Sandy, what if somebody said that about our leader?
Sure, obviously. You know, we would take great offense, you know, if Russia said, you know what, it's time to unseat Joe Biden. And in fact, that was the whole nature of the hue and cry about the intervention, apparent intervention into our social media that might have been tinkering with our election process. But interestingly, that was tinkering with people's minds, and it was a social media process that might or might not have been emanating from, for instance, Russia or Ukraine. But that was tinkering with people's minds. That wasn't using military force and political sanctions and international pressure. So, you know, I think the way we're going about things, particularly with our foreign affairs, is being handled badly. We're not having reasoned public debate with educated, sophisticated people educated in foreign affairs, and we're sort of leaving it to the political process to appeal to the macho instincts of our people, and those macho instincts are going to get us in a lot of trouble. They're getting us, you know, we're Nancy Pelosi and the macho process to Taiwan is potentially going to create a terrible problem in South China Sea and with China, and that same process with Ukraine has put the world in a difficult situation in Ukraine. Now, Russia invaded Ukraine, but we have to go back to the second tier question: why, and why do we think Russia did that in the first place?
You know, it says 18% of the American people think that's going too far. While the remaining 22% are undecided. You know, the survey was of 1,500 eligible voters. I mean, people who are in this listening audience, many of them may agree that we as the United States should be able to determine who the leader should be. You know, we've done that in smaller countries, but when we're talking about Russia, yeah. I mean, you got to, and I don't know, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, incidentally, our history, we have done it. You know, we can look at Iran in 1953, and we participated in creating
Mohammed Mossadegh.
Mossadegh, that got rid of Mossadegh and installed the Shah, and has created forever, ever since then, a terrible problem with the Iranian people and with Iran. We did it in Iraq. We got rid of Saddam Hussein, undoubtedly a very bad person. He was a bad person. Mossadegh, in every respect, looked like he was the good guy elected in a pure democratic process, but he wasn't towing the line with respect to what the British and Americans wanted him to do with oil. And the right to oil in Iran. We did it in Libya. We've done it in a whole bunch of countries that has created vacuums and has left an aftermath of disaster. So should we be tinkering in the internal domestic affairs of countries where we don't think the country is necessarily has installed a government to our liking? Incidentally, we do that on a very selective basis. We don't decide to tinker within the governments of, for instance, Saudi Arabia or a bunch of other governments that are clearly contrary to our view of what a democratic government ought to be.
You know, I've been reading about Xi, and the fact that he is now his third term, and we are saying, well, he shouldn't be there, and what he's doing is wrong, and so why is he there? Why is he doing this? That's not our business, Sandy. If we thought he was good enough to do business with him, I mean, correct me, Sandy, help me understand. We've been doing business with him all along, but now all of a sudden he's the worst guy in the world and we don't want him there, you know, but yet we're still doing business. It's not something that we even give pause to, Sandy, if for the majority of the American people. We jump on the bandwagon that China is our enemy, and so we just accept the fact that they're our enemy.
Well, and then, in fact, it's interesting that they became our enemy over the past 5 or 6 years. We have to point out a reason why they've become our enemy. So we've decided that it's Xi and the way he's conducting business inside China that has made him our enemy. You know, the fact that he's acting and that China is acting somewhat more aggressively with respect to how they're handling, for instance, military exercises. We have to look at how we've been handling our military exercises and whether, in fact, we haven't been doing things which clearly would be viewed as potentially aggressive from their standpoint. And there's no question about it. The way we've been dealing with Taiwan over the last 5 or 6 years has clearly been, from the standpoint of China, been being viewed as, and correctly viewed as more aggressive and militant with respect to Taiwan. And so we need, our foreign affairs have been broken for decades and decades. They get fixed periodically when things are so obvious that we unify behind them. And the last time that happened really was World War II. And ever since World War II, our foreign affairs have been fraught with error. The Cold War was a period of stability, interestingly, because at least we had rules of conduct and rules of engagement that seemed to create a détente amongst the major powers in the country. The real danger now is we don't have a Cold War with implicit rules. We have this increasingly hot Cold War with a couple of countries in which there are no rules of engagement. So with Russia, for instance, right now we're operating fresh territory, no rules, not like the Cold War with the USSR, entirely different and fraught with much more danger.
You know, though, Sandy, during the Cold War, the leaders on both sides, the United States and Russia, they at least were having dialogue. And I don't know, Sandy, we got to go to a break. Lost track. 844-967-2789 is the number. Got to go to a break. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Friday. It means Fridays with Sandy Williams. You know, Sandy, I remember in many of the men, Zbigniew Brzezinski and all of these other folk who would be debating with Russia during the Cold War and others, and they took this and these were always high ranking discussions as they took it seriously about, and maybe, Sandy, it was because those people saw what happened in Hiroshima and Nagasaki and they knew and saw with their own eyes the damage that happened there. And they took all that stuff, I don't know, I can't say they took it a lot more seriously, but it seemed like it was more, you know, important, I guess, Sandy. I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, sir, go ahead.
Yeah, so, you know, in World War II, you have to look at what was going on. There were major powers, and these major powers had conversations directly with one another, and they sort of divvied up the world in a way. The Yalta Conference, the conversations between Roosevelt, Stalin, and Churchill were power-to-power conversations that, and there was a perception that these major powers needed to deal with one another, and they reached agreements with one another based on practicality, so that the Warsaw Pact countries, the Iron Curtain countries, were essentially established with the acquiescence of both England and the United States. And there was a recognition of the hegemonies of these various countries. And with that recognition came a kind of the rules of play in the Cold War. So, you know, there were telephones in the White House and in Moscow where there were the ability of the president to talk directly to the head of the USSR to make sure that there wouldn't be accidental firings of missiles. They understood the complexity and the danger that was involved with it. And they also understood certain rules of play in terms of where military exercises would take place, exactly what kind of teasing they could do of one another that was okay without being too aggressive. And all of that was an odd sort of rules of conduct and rules of engagement, but they existed. And the problem now is they don't exist. And we backed into a new situation that could be a Cold War, but it could be a hot war as well. And the situation that we have ongoing in Ukraine is unique. We never had anything like this ongoing with Russia. The closest we had was the North Korea-South Korea proxy war, in which Russia was providing arms. And we did have arms being provided by Russia to the North Vietnamese, but we never had anything like at the scale that we currently have ongoing with Ukraine.
You know, Sandy, I heard yesterday or watched it on nightly news where Vladimir Putin talked about shooting down some American satellites because the satellites have been used to help in the war in Ukraine. And anybody who doesn't think that that's something that is a real serious issue, and that we have to find out about that via television, and that there hasn't been a direct conversation with Vladimir Putin and whoever is in charge on our side, and Sandy, and also the fact that we've got Democrats and Republicans seeing this thing differently. Am I the only person who sees these things as just absolutely insane?
Well, you know, like we've said before, though, I'm all for not having the requirement that our foreign affairs be bipartisan, because at least how we formulate our foreign affairs ought to be an argument that occurs within our country. When we reach agreement, then I think we have to be united about the agreement we've reached. The problem I have with our foreign affairs now is that there isn't that prior discussion ongoing about what they should be, and we end up having our foreign affairs announced to us. With respect to these satellites, it's a little different than it sounds. He didn't talk about shooting down government satellites. He talked about shooting down private enterprise satellites. Okay. So if you look at it, so he was basically
Elon Musk
Starlinks. And those Starlink satellites are being used, I'm sure, for surveillance purposes, to provide very clear data to the Ukrainians about things like the military movements of Russia, et cetera. And so it's a bit like, I guess, blowing up a telephone line, except that in today's world, it isn't telephone lines, it's satellite communication. It's an awful prospect, but it is essentially aimed at private infrastructure that's being used to support the Ukrainian war. And I suppose if the rules were reversed, we might be doing the opposite.
I'm trying to reconcile that in my mind, private entity that our military allows to act in that manner. Does our military then have a responsibility if things happen to that private entity? That's the question, right?
Well, I'm not sure the military allows him to act in that manner. I mean, the military is not, for instance, either sponsoring or blocking volunteers in America who want to volunteer for the Ukrainian Legion and go over and fight in the war. And so what essentially happened was Elon Musk volunteered to contribute the asset that he had, which was his Starlink satellites and access to it. And, you know, I don't know. I don't think the military... The U.S. government could exercise some kind of unilateral control over it, but it would have to be through a
proclamation. I meant if Russia retaliates against those satellites. Listen, we got to go to break. Hold the thought. 844-967-2789. It's Friday with Sandy Williams. Got to go to a break. We'll be right back.
Everything starts from now.
Everything now.
Everything starts from now.
Everything starts from now.
Everything.
Everything starts from now.
Everything starts from now.
Now.
Everything starts.
All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at the same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's with Sandy Williams. And you know, Sandy, your mind just runs. I know my mind just runs rampant with just the things that I keep hearing and reading. And you know, you said before that the satellites that Putin is talking about shooting down, you know, belong to the private sector. The private sector is acting in a manner in conjunction, we could say, even though, I don't know, they haven't, I'm sure our government hadn't sat down with Elon Musk. Well, maybe they have and said, okay, if you're going to, you know, provide these satellites, you know, we got to be careful because, you know, these things could draw us into, you know, a deeper involvement in the war. So I'm sure at some point, Sandy, they probably have had some kind of conversations, wouldn't you think?
Well, I think they probably have. And of course, you know, the response was this kind of purposefully vague response, which was that if they do that, we will respond in appropriate fashion, which we don't know what that means exactly. What is the appropriate fashion for the U.S. government in terms of response to the shooting down of a communication satellite that's owned by a private entity? And so, you know, I suppose there are Russian satellites up there that can be taken out, and so we'll end up with Star Wars.
But it's not funny, Sandy. It's all possible.
Yeah, it's all possible. And so what will we end up doing? We'll end up sacking the ability of the world to communicate with one another through satellites through this conflict. I mean, I don't think the world is prepared. I don't think we are prepared for what it means to have an all-out conflict in today's world with another major power. And, you know, I think we should have been doing everything possible to avoid it, and we should be now. And that doesn't mean appeasement, but on the other hand, appeasement is in the eye of the beholder. There was a day, you know, as I said, after World War II and for many years thereafter, where we were recognizing the hegemony of other major powers. There are three major powers in the world right now, two that are most major, China and the United States, and then another very major power, which is Russia. And you would think that we should continue to recognize in some practical, pragmatic sense the hegemony of those nations, because otherwise our ability to regulate what those nations do and to, you know, this period of Pax Americana, where there were two major nations, Russia and the USSR and the United States, the collapse of the USSR left the United States as the only major power. It was a bit like the end of World War II. That was Pax Americana too, accidentally for a period of time. That period of time is ended. China has risen to the point of being a major power. And the notion that that a speech by the Chinese leader who would forecast that by 2050, China will be the largest economy in the world, and to view that as an aggressive speech is kind of crazy, because almost every economist in the world, if asked who is going to be the major economy in 2050, would have a five-letter country as the answer to that.
But Sandy, that's only common sense when you just look at the sheer numbers of the people. That's inevitable. Let's go to the phone lines quickly. And Chad from Greenfield. Hey, good morning, Chad. Thank you very much for the call. You say what?
Hey, Earl and Sandy. I had to call in because the last time I talked to you guys, sorry to change the topic, but I had to sneak out of work. When I talked to you guys last time, I talked about crime. I talked about this carjacking. And basically, Sandy and you guys dismissed it. What should we do? And I said, throw these people in jail. And then what happens on Tuesday night? This man gets beaten to death. His car gets jacked. They find his car later with four tires missing. And it's all dismissed by you guys. And I said, if you throw these people in jail, they can never do it again. Do you think these guys were first-time offenders? No. Now someone's dead. Lives are lost. And it's all dismissed by your side. And that's why you guys are going to get crushed in the elections, because you're so soft on crime. What are you going to do, throw these people in jail? Yes, throw them in jail. It never would have happened again. Well, it's on the hands of you guys. With that kind of attitude. And it's a sick thing. And if they would have been tougher in crime and in jail, that man would be alive today. And it makes me sick to my stomach.
See Sandy, this is, again, someone on the other side of this.
Well, nobody. No,
let me finish my point, man. I'll let you speak. Nobody's saying that they support any of what it is you are talking about. No Democrat has said they support that. But you and others like you want to bring that in and put this at the foot of Democrats and say we are the reason that has occurred. Sandy, yes. You want to respond to that?
Well, of course. I mean, first of all, the argument is a straw argument. There isn't anyone who wouldn't agree that someone who beats somebody to death shouldn't be prosecuted with the full force of the law. And do we really think that the fact that other people haven't been, that there aren't more police, that more police would cause this not to happen? I mean, if you had enough police to keep it from happening in a social setting in which there is a prevalence of hopelessness, we should get to the second tier question. Yes, we have more crime. Yes, we probably need more police to deal with the crime. But what we really need to do is change the social situation that's causing that additional crime. And if we don't change that, we're not going to change additional crime. We've proven already that more police doesn't solve for crime, because we've increased the police forces in this country many fold from what they were in 1990 or 1995. And we haven't reduced crime in the process.
See, my point is, Sandy, when I called, you said, well, what would you do with these people? And I said, throw them in jail. And you stopped at that. If those people were in jail, they never would have been able to steal that car. That man probably stuck up for himself because he drank. No, you dismissed it when I said put him in jail. No, you did.
Put who in jail? Look.
Put any carjacker in jail. Send a message.
But how long? How long do you put them in jail, and how much does it cost to put them in jail? And how old?
Well, it would have saved that man's life the other day.
Do you know how old most of these carjackers are? Most of them are committing carjackings when they're in their early teens.
And we do nothing. And that's why they keep repeating. And I said, put them in jail, and you won't allow it to happen. And now this man is dead. He probably stuck up for his car. He got dragged to death. He got beaten to death. If we would have put these people in jail, like I said, this man would be alive.
So Chad,
and it's disgusting. And that's why you guys are going to get crushed.
So Chad.
People are angry.
So Chad.
People are angry.
So Chad, it's not as simplistic as you and others want to make it. So put everybody in jail. Yes, what happened to that man is tragic. What happens to people all over the nation that die, who are murdered by people who have assault weapons?
Earl, it was tragic and it was preventable.
Hold on.
But it was preventable.
People who get slaughtered by assault weapons is tragic and preventative, and it could be prevented if people didn't have access to assault weapons. But guys on your side want to make sure that everybody has an assault weapon. So when you want to pick out one issue, sir, and then filibuster on the one issue and not address what Sandy is saying, a bigger issue. We're never going to fix this.
Yeah. Earl, everyone I know that owns an assault weapon has never committed a crime. Over 98% of people who own assault weapons have not committed crime. Higher than that, all these carjackers are 100% committing crimes. It's not even comparable. Wait, a man is dead.
Chad, just slow down just something? A minute. Yeah. Go ahead.
I mean, the issue with what you're talking about is that when it comes to, I mean, I know people out in Wisconsin that have committed crimes, like, when they're teens, and because there are resources and programs available, right, for teens that do things like that, because it's most likely linked to mental health or a lack of a support structure, right? They've been able to go from that and get a job and get some type of employment. You go to a place like Milwaukee where that isn't the case, and you have police officers patrolling every single corner, right? That makes it incredibly difficult for those kids to learn from their mistakes and change. And because I provided one example, right? Because you provided one example of this one terrible person, this one terrible thing, right? If I can provide another example of us having more police, right, and that not working, then your entire argument doesn't hold, right?
Because that's totally untrue. It was three people that murdered this man.
You can't take a comprehensive solution, right, to a diversified issue, right? There are many factors that cause crime. There are many factors that cause murder. Putting more police in the neighborhoods is not going to solve the problem. That's from experience. That's from statistics. I mean, it's a denial of reality to even think, right, by having more force, right, and not actually understanding the root of why crime happens and then changing that, right, isn't going to help. So
well said.
So if we didn't have more police and patrol, they could have witnessed the accident or this heinous murder and could have stopped it.
But it's anecdotal.
If we had more
anecdotal
patrol people out there.
We don't.
It's not anecdotal.
It is anecdotal, right? Because even in the case you described, it's only as terrible because the person committed a murder, right? You can commit a carjacking. You can commit a carjacking, right? Okay. And that cannot be as comparable to someone that commits murder,
okay,
right?
Connor,
that's one
they were murdered because of the carjacking.
Okay,
because of the carjacking, the guy got murdered.
Chad, we got you. Thank you very much for the call.
Thank you for the opportunity. Have a good weekend.
Let's go to Gary from Sussex. Gary, you say what? Quickly.
Guys that commit that leave Milwaukee and come out to Waukesha and commit crimes, carjack with a gun. Those four young men that got caught. The guy with the gun got. He's on the. A bond of $300,000, and the other guys, I think it's like $175,000. What you can do, you got to come down tough on these guys. And I understand. My son committed crimes when he was 19 years old and was sentenced to prison for 20 years. And I know when you're dumb and you're young and you're stupid, you don't mature until you're 25 years old, really, basically. But thank God that we got good lawyers and we got good judges, we've got our son out after 7 years. But the fact is, he is a different person. He's 45 years old. He's married. He has his own business.
Well, but that's what Sandy is saying. Sandy is saying.
That's what I'm saying.
You know, Gary's agreeing.
I understand it.
All right.
And I understand. My son is 19 years old and was sentenced to 20 years in prison. He grew up when he was in prison. And because he grew up, we hired attorneys. It cost us $100,000. We got a good judge, and he's out. And I understand that, you know, you can't throw away the key on these guys, but you got to hold them in jail and just don't let them bond out on, you know, $500 or something like that. You know, these kids in Waukesha, they sent them a message, and these guys will not get out of jail for probably 10 or 15 years because they won't be able to bond out. You know,
so let Sandy respond. Go ahead, Sandy.
Well, I mean, they weren't going to bond out in Milwaukee either for committing murders. So we aren't there. People who are charged with murder aren't being released to the streets anywhere with a low bail or a bond. But with respect to the situation of people being incarcerated and the rate of crime, we should all look at this objectively. The highest crime rate is within the city, and the biggest number of victims are people within the city who are victims. So yes, a Waukesha person was a victim of this carjacking, and that was tragic. But every day, there are murders within the city.
Yes,
exactly.
Yes,
black on black crimes, and we aren't really talking about so much that situation, but we need to solve the situation of the socioeconomic circumstance that causes this prevalence of young people committing crimes. you know, you're right about your son, and everyone should have an opportunity to change their lives. And your son was lucky enough to have parents who had money who got him out of it. If he was an inner city kid, he wouldn't have had that opportunity, and he would have been spent
still
a lot more time
up. Yes.
And would probably have learned a lot of criminal conduct as well in the remaining years in prison. We just need to examine this thing. There's lots of reasoned countries out there who have a far better circumstance with respect to crime than we do in the United States. And having a military occupation, having many, many police in a locale is a pretty unappetizing outcome if you think about it.
And unsustainable, Sandy.
Yeah, but having police everywhere. Yeah, I mean, the comment of the earlier caller that if there had been police there to witness it, they would have stopped it. How many police do we want? We are very upset about the direction China's going and having police everywhere.
Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. To the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's with Sandy Williams. You know, Sandy and Connor and the listening audience, you know, this goes back to what we began the show talking about, Sandy. People who you try to have a dialogue and a conversation with who have tunnel vision. And there's you can't get them to see anything other than, you know, Chad is just angry, he's irate. Nobody's saying that what took place with that man who lost his life, you know, that he somehow connects us to that, Sandy. You know, you and I have had something to do, you know, and Democrats and all of those crazy things.
Well, you know, there was on the news break at the half hour, there was the mention of the politician in the western part of the state who was basically saying that Democrats can't be Christians.
I heard that.
But, you know, and so this is a reflection of the extent to which people mistrust one another at the very heart of on values, you know, that somehow liberals will destroy the country. That's what this person was saying. And I think that the problem we have is, you know, we have more crime. What's the answer to that? Well, we possibly need more police to deal with the acute situation of more crime. But why do we have more crime? And we don't have more crime because we don't have more police. You know, that's where we run into the faulty thinking. We have more crime because of the socioeconomic circumstance that drives people in that direction. We need more police possibly to deal temporarily with the numbers of criminals or the amount of criminal conduct until we deal with the socioeconomic circumstance to abate that. And if we don't ever deal with the socioeconomic circumstance, you know, having essentially a military occupation is only putting a Band-Aid over a very serious problem.
Tom, quickly from L.A. Tom?
Yeah, I get a really, really, maybe I just mistrust them or whatever, but I get so sick of the, oh, my God, drama falling on the couch when, you know, someone unfortunately passes away. But yet we had Donald Trump who basically said there was no COVID. How many people died there? We have, like you said, Earl, mass shootings. They don't seem to care about that at all. This is so ridiculous. Just like the thing with Hillary Clinton and Benghazi, all three people passed away. Oh, my God, how bad. You Democrats, you kill everyone, blah, blah, blah. But you know what? When something happens on their side, we just know that that's part of life, unfortunately, whatever. I'm not saying that I'm not concerned about these people. I'm not concerned. I am concerned about the person that got hijacked and killed. But you know what? give me a break, you conservatives that call up and be like, oh my God, because it just fits your narrative about the whole thing
but
with,
Tom, to blame
with crime.
But to blame Democrats
ridiculous.
And say you guys are responsible for that, it's just crazy.
Oh, it fits their little narrative for the election. That's all they care about is power. That's all they care about. I don't believe they're being true. You know, they might be thinking to themselves that they're being true. They're not being true to themselves. They're just basically trying to win a political argument. We at least come to the table with a little bit of honesty in terms of, you know, what the situation is.
Hey, Tom,
but these
Tom,
guys,
Tom, we got to yeah. run, man. Thank you very much for the call.
Yep.
CJ, quickly.
Thank you, Earl. Thank you, Sandy. But, yes, there's DAs out there who are not prosecuting and not forcing these people to serve their terms and believe, like New York, they're recalling Brand. They're recalling the DA in Los Angeles because crime is rampant. And your party, yes, Earl, looks the other way. They're, you know, socioeconomic. How about the family structure is destroyed in the black community? And that's where it starts. It's the parents' fault. Not blaming you.
Hey, CJ. Let me say this to you. You said the family unit and the black community is destroyed. Is the only crime done in the society in the black community?
Well, it's not. Okay, so then what are you talking about?
Let's say they have the rest of it. Go ahead.
All right.
Yeah, let's get beyond that, though. I mean, I think CJ was recognizing the problem in spite of himself. Yes, there is a problem in the black community with respect to nuclear families that has generated over time. But when sociologists look at that and examine it, it's socioeconomic conditions that have laid the groundwork for it. Unemployment, multi-generational unemployment, and the situation of isolation. Why do we think it's uniquely happening there? It isn't a function of color, it's a function of socioeconomic conditions. And that's the problem with people who try to look at this problem.
You
can say that, yes, families and the lack of family support is a problem, but don't we owe an obligation to those children who are born into that circumstance?
So, Sandy, my problem with what CJ said is that crime is not just created by black people. Crime, the rise in crime across this nation is from everywhere and everybody. And he's speaking and talking as if it's only an issue with black people. That's not the case.
The same thing is true for nuclear families as well.
Yes. Yes, that's not the case. But that's the narrative that he and Chad want to present. Go ahead, Sandy.
I know. What they're ignoring is that it's socioeconomics. And
which
it's
doesn't
not,
go, and it's, which is not color
which is not
driven.
Color, right?
Right.
Yes. You know, the same, go to West Virginia to see if they're having problems with crime, drugs, and nuclear families. You know, they're having lots of problems. They're having it all over the country.
And rural areas that have been depressed. Right? Listen, I wish we had more time. We got to go. Sandy, thank you as always. Really appreciate it, my friend. Connor, thank you. Thank everybody for a great week. We got to get out of here. I'll be back on Monday. Saturday we're going to be doing a live remote. Crudy and I will be at North Division with former President Barack Obama. You've been tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. See you later.